Hey, what's up, guys? Today's guest is an entrepreneur who has an absolute love and passion for all things Lego. Kenny Lee started Limeye Bricks in 2016 as a passion project to showcase his love of Lego with other like-minded creators. And after years of innovation and dedication, Limeye Bricks has become the lighting companion in the industry, having turned over 10 million last year with a team of 30 employees. Let's dive in.
Dude, thank you so much for joining us today.
No
and
problem.
I'm excited to have you with us, man. And you know, we've hung out a little bit. We got to spend some time together last night. We went bar hopping with our friend Paul from Hospo Dojo, which was quite interesting. So we just got to, I guess, know each other on a bit more of an intimate level.
Yep.
And your background, dude, you actually were in a frontman of a band, not
That's
just
right.
once, but twice. And
Believe
then you
it
also
or not.
Worked at Channel V, man.
Yes, I did.
So you have
yeah.
a big background in creative and in the music industry.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, growing up, I always wanted to do something different and not just have a normal job. So it started off at a very young age, you know, wanting to play music and be in a band. And like for many, many years, that's all I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, had a stint being a frontman for a band and being like, you know, a guitarist / frontman for another band. Doing that and trying to, you know, learning a lot. We toured, we recorded. We worked on merchandise, so there's a lot of learnings that I took from that as well.
Mm.
That fizzled out and then did the whole corporate gig, hated it. And then Channel V was massive at, you know, back then. And they did this whole presenter search thing and I was like, that's something I could do again. And so I tried that out and made a lot of connections through there and then actually got a job and lived in Sydney for a year doing music programming for Channel V and Channel V Hits. And I got to, you know, the privilege of interviewing some really cool bands as well.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the novelty wore off and I was like, I miss my home. I miss my dog. And we came back and that's when we started the family and I went back to the corporate gig as well.
Yeah. So what was the corporate gig that you went back to?
So prior to going to Channel V, it was doing IT for a foreign exchange company. Man, it sounds so boring just saying it. And so that made me quit that. And then after Channel V, I came back into IT, but it was more a customer service type role. It was like techies, like desktop support people. I was good at telling people how to turn off and on their PC and take the credit for fixing their computer. So, you know, it was that more customer-centric side of things that kind of made it easier, you know, to keep going at. So, yeah, that was the IT journey.
And for you, so it sounds like you're naturally a creative kind of guy. So
yep.
then how did you find yourself in the corporate space being yep. so naturally creative?
I think it was more just making it was all about the customer. So customer service has been huge ever since I started working. So making sure customers are happy one way or another, you know, even it was, you know, creating processes that helped with that or, you know, being able to deal with difficult people.
Right.
I think that's always a good challenge. And
have you always enjoyed that though?
Yeah, I kind of do. Like I kind of get a kick out of turning someone's negative experience into a good one.
Okay.
And if they can walk away happy, it's like, man, you killed it. You did your job kind of thing.
Right. So would you say like that's served you well on all your business ventures so far?
Yeah,
because it seems like through your journey with Limeye Bricks being such a, I guess, when it comes to like products from your experience that deal with, you know, things that are pop culture or things that are like collectors centric or things that are, you know, people really take pride in their collections
yeah.
or pride in developing and building Lego systems and all the rest of that.
Yep.
Would you say that community is probably more ruthless than others or what's been your experience within that space?
Yeah. Look, the stereotypical Lego person is that nerdy, terribly social person or socially aware person.
Yeah.
And, you know, they might have pet peeves or whatever and it's really easy to just make them angry because like they just don't understand stuff. It's like, well, why can't you do this or why can't you do that? So, but for me, I think it's I would consider myself quite compassionate and I always put myself in their shoes.
Yeah.
I'm a customer as well. So when there's a good experience, I'm like, I love that because it's hard to have that good experience. Not many companies or products out there can offer that.
Right.
So when I see a good one and I have a good experience, I'm like, man, that's awesome. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And also like, you know, you don't just look at this as a business venture. This is a passion of yours.
Yeah, 100%.
So, you know, I loved Lego personally growing up as a kid. It was like, you know, this amazing activity that occupied my mind creatively when I was like 6, 7, 8 and so on. For you, you expressed that you were able to kind of revisit your childhood together with your children.
Yeah.
And this kind of unearthed this whole opportunity for yourself. So, you know, if you take us back to the origin, like how did you fall back in love with Lego and then go from doing that to running, you know, this giant e-com business around the world?
So, you know, when you have kids, you start buying Lego for them and then you obviously have to help them. You know, it's their first set. And I found myself enjoying it more than them, you know. They're like, what am I doing? Oh, give me the packaging. Let me just play with the box or whatever. But I'm like, oh, this is really cool. You know, I'm just like building stuff. I'm like, hey, check this out. So that's what kind of reignited that flame. And then from there, I'm like, what other Lego sets are there? And then you look and you're like, dude, the one that's like $200-$300, it's like, you know, 2,000 pieces, it's fully detailed, because I always loved miniature stuff, like miniature lands, anything miniature, I love it. So that's how I found this particular series, which was the Lego Modular Building Series, and each year Lego bring one out. And the whole idea is you buy one, the next year you buy another one, and before you know it, you're like your own Lego mayor and you've got your own Lego street. So that's what I loved. And so that's
you took pride in your miniature
I loved it, man. I put it like up. A god. Yeah, that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Yeah. What year was it when they started to re-release these sets?
So the first modular building came out around 2010. So before... a couple of years before I, you know, dived back into it. Yeah. But yeah, they release one every year. And
since 2010?
Yeah, around for that particular series, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So they started to bring back some of the older series or?
Oh, they do that all the time, especially with franchise stuff. Okay. So you've got like Lego Star Wars back from the 90s, 2000s, Harry Potter, early 2000s. But then they'll discontinue and then they'll make re-release ones. Okay. Yeah, so if you look up Lego Millennium Falcon, there'll be like so many different versions of it.
Right. Yeah, there's a whole different ton of different sizes and everything else as well. Yeah.
Slight modifications or improvements, that
so
kind of thing.
So what year was it when you really started to mess with the Lego sets with your kids?
That was about 2015-ish.
Okay. Yeah, and how long until you were like, I'm not buying this for the kids anymore, I'm buying it for me.
Straight away, man. After that first one, the next one, I'm like, this, you'd like this one, but it's like really deep down, that's for me.
Yeah, I started doing that with Duplo with my daughter.
Yeah.
She's three.
Yeah.
And I just kept buying her Duplo sets. Yeah. And my partner Ellie's like, why do you keep buying the Lego? And I was like, it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. You know, there's so many other, you know, parents that are rediscovering like their passion for Lego just by doing that. Because it's like Lego are smart. They you know, before they change directions, it was all about like you. It's relevant to anybody, not just kids. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because even if you go into the branding of Lego, you know, I grew up and Lego was for kids.
Yeah.
They marketed it towards kids. They advertised it towards children.
Yep.
The colors on the boxes were this is a toy, right? Mm-hmm. The fonts were this is a toy. Advertisements were for predominantly children. Now you walk into a you know, a retail outlet or a Lego store and half or more of half the store is adult Lego.
Yeah.
Like what happened, man?
Yeah. Lego are smart, you know. They realize maybe COVID had a big part of it too. They just realized that adults growing up playing Lego and then when they're older, they've got disposable income. They love to collect stuff. And Lego know that, and they're going to touch on that, especially with all these different themes that they're bringing out that are like kind of nostalgic and, you know, 1989 Batman, for example, Ghostbusters, stuff that was big in the 80s.
Yeah.
They're bringing it out now, and who are they targeting? They're not targeting kids because kids don't know this stuff. It's all the adults. And so they've realized that, and then they're gearing more towards that and rebranded this new line of, you know, adult-focused sets with 18 plus. You never saw that back in the day. Yeah. There was like 6 plus and 8 plus. And back then it was like, ooh, is that going to be too difficult for my child because he's under 8? Now, as if, you know, it's not like Lego are checking people's ID and saying you have to be over 18 to build something.
Yeah.
I believe it's strategic.
Yeah.
You know, it makes you feel, as an adult, you feel better about buying this black box set.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because I remember 18 plus. Yeah. I remember being like at a toy store and you'd see like this cool Millennium Falcon set, but it had children's branding on it. You're like, I kind of want to buy this.
Exactly.
But you're like, oh, I don't want to be seen as a giant child.
Yeah, that's
you know?
It. That's
and
it.
Now you go into the store and it's like black and it's cool and it says 18 plus in the corner and you're like, oh, that's kind of badass. I want to buy that, man.
Well, they have this section now. It's like they'll say adults welcome, right? And then all the adult sets are there and it's almost like, you know, the adults will go and buy something. They're like, oh, yeah, this is not the kids' zone. So this is the accepted zone.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like Hasbro. You know, Hasbro Collectibles, they have the black series. It's the same kind of thing, right?
Right.
It's like black. It's like, oh, that adult collectors. You know, it's the same kind of thing.
What's the Hasbro black series? Maybe we could pull it up. Is that like, are you talking about action figures?
They do action figures. They do like lightsabers. They do like helmets, you know, right. And they call it the Hasbro Black Series.
Yeah. Okay. And that's similar. So would you say that Lego's kind of learned this strategy off Hasbro or perhaps the other way around?
Yeah.
Or you're not sure?
Well, Hasbro were doing it first. They've always had the Black Series kind of thing. So it could be they took inspiration on that and they're like, you know what, we're going to do this too.
Yeah.
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 And now it's like, a lot of people who are unfamiliar with this whole change of direction of Lego, they're always still associate Lego being for kids or it's a toy.
Yeah.
You know, but now it's very much a collector's item, you know? Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so much so that you now actually buy and invest in Lego. So talk about that.
Yeah. Lego investment, I wouldn't say I'm an investor in terms of I'm going to buy something and hope to make money from it. I just love buying it. Because it's cool and you can keep it. And it's like, there's something just so cool about you have one, you build it because you want to go through that whole customer experience. But at the same time, you love to have a brand new unopened box just to store away.
Right.
It's kind of like people who collect action figures and they just want to keep it in that packaging.
Yeah, they want to play with one and keep one.
Yeah, that's it. So I'm purely buying a second set just to have just because I love it.
Yeah.
But there are hardcore Lego investors out there. You know what I mean? Yeah. They don't know anything about Lego, but they know they're smart. It's like looking at the share market. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They will buy because they believe that this particular franchise set or whatever will hold value over time, you know? But it's similar to any kind of collectible. Yeah. Like,
so what's an example of that? Like what's something that, you know, maybe can't be purchased anymore. It's going up in value.
Yeah. So one of my favorite ones is it's the first Lego modular building that came out. It's the Cafe Corner. It's just this simple corner set. It's a cafe with a hotel. There's like no detail in it. There's like not to the level that they do now.
Yeah.
And at the time it would have been like a $200-$300 set. It's now worth like over $5,000.
What?
Because there's certain colors of bricks that they don't make anymore.
Wow.
That will drive price up. Wow. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, comic books that are now rare because they have a certain cover on them and things like that. So the same thing kind of happens in the Lego space where people are now buying Lego, stashing them and, you know, they're going up in value.
So then there's those Lego community of haters that just absolutely hate it because they're like, oh, you know, I can't get it because this guy here has bought 5 sets to just store away and I couldn't even buy one. So it's like, oh, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So back to the origin story. So you were working in corporate.
Yep.
You're buying Lego for your children. You found a love and passion for it, maybe more than they did.
Yeah, for sure.
And it got to the point where you were explaining to me that you were saying to your wife, I need to buy this $1,300 Millennium Falcon set.
Well, she would have kicked me out of the house if I said that. It was like, we're talking about like $200 sets, you know, at the time. Yeah.
So not quite the Millennium Falcon.
Not quite.
You were like, you had your eye on it, but maybe you'll level up to it, right?
It's funny. Like, I am very like, if I like something, I'm going to go hard for it. And even if it takes trying to convince the wife, but they didn't go so well. But it was me trying to be like, because I know she likes miniature stuff as well. I'm like, oh, this one's pretty cool. This has a lot of detail. This one will be, you know, more bang.
We could do it together.
Yeah, that kind of thing. She's like, nah, what are you talking about? But for me, I think it was more, I was learning about tax deductions and all that kind of thing. And I was like, imagine if you were in a business and you could buy Lego and that would be a tax write-off. How cool would that be? And that's kind of like what sparked that idea. But then I didn't realize that later on, because I was trying to find lights myself, I couldn't find it. And I started thinking, all right, I'm just going to try and do it myself, realizing that I can make a product out of it. And I was like, and I can buy Lego and make it tax deductible. Oh, man, I'm in the path.
So just for clarity here for people that are listening, in front of us, we have a Ghostbusters Lego set that your team didn't just make lights for, but you engineered a system of lighting so that on the top of it, the lights are rotating.
Yeah.
On the front, they're flickering in the headlights. And I do believe it makes sound.
Yeah.
Right. So this is a set our team built, right?
Yeah.
We were fascinated with what you were doing. And then you add the lighting system to it. And your business is in creating these lighting sets for the adult Lego.
Yeah. That's it. So it's very much a product that enhances that model, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So we put a lot of time and effort into making this product the best it can be, which is a Lego product, and that's with lights. So we like to look at it like, if this thing was alive or real, what would the lights look like?
Right, so you're not just like, let's just put headlights on this thing.
Yeah.
You guys would actually go back and watch the Ghostbusters movie and be like, the lights rotate, these ones flicker, they're actually this color.
That's it.
Like how much detail and research goes into each set that you guys engineered
live? Yeah, look, it depends on the set, but something like this is so detailed. And like we, all of our components, you can use them, they flash, all that kind of thing, but they might not look 100% as real or as accurate as it could be to the film. So we're watching it and we're looking at different parts. And if we don't have that particular component that can achieve that result, we'll go into product development and start creating this component that makes it, yeah, you know, rather than using something that we already have and it's not quite 100% accurate, we're going to go and make it to make it accurate. Yeah.
So what's an example of something crazy you guys have done with light engineering for a set?
You know, something like the Eiffel Tower, which is a 1.5 meter tall
wow,
set. The Eiffel Tower at night, it goes into this light show. Like it'll go from warm lights, they'll sparkle like crazy, then they'll change and go like do that light projection of RGB different lights. So
you're talking about in real life?
Yeah, in real life.
Okay.
So obviously for the Lego model, we want to do the same thing. And so we're like, how do we create this thing? So we you know,
long story. Whose idea on it on the team was it to be like, guys, this is not good enough? Like we need to research.
Always me. Like I'm like, research it, watch it. And it like at the time I was like, how the heck are we gonna do that? Because if you've seen the Eiffel Tower, it's like does this crazy sparkle show and it's like, how do you get that many lights and achieve that? But we were able to achieve that with like a whole bunch of like, we call it light strings. And we basically, I'm good at telling people, like I'm not an engineer myself, but if I have an idea in my head, I'll just work with our designers and engineers to achieve that. So let's say, for example, you know, we wanted to make this thing sparkle and then automatically change the static sparkle and they'll do it and say the sparkle's not right. I'm like, nah. Change that, do it again. Here's a reference, do it again, that kind of thing. So
you're like the Steve Jobs of like Lego lighting.
I'm like, I want one button. That's it. I want as accurate as possible.
Yeah.
And so like you can achieve that. It's got this whole remote control thing as well. So it's our biggest lighting kit. But it's as accurate as we can.
Yeah.
To the real thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's incredible, man. So walk me through it. So you were doing this with the kids.
Yep.
You started to debate with your wife, like, you need to buy Lego. How did you go from just crunching the numbers in your head to go, wouldn't it be great if it was a tax deduction, to like having the actual idea of like, I'm going to create my own lighting for my little town.
Yeah.
Is that how it started? Was it more of a passion? Yeah. Like I want lights for my town.
Yeah, that's it.
And then you're like, hang on, there's a product here.
Yeah.
Like, how did that kind of play out?
I think for me it was like, okay, I wanted to do it for myself and I realized, oh, that's easier than I thought, you know, as in how to light something. Because I'm not, like I said, I'm not an electronics guy. I'm not the guy who will get a soldering iron out and experiment and all that kind of thing. I just love following instructions and creating something.
Right.
That's my, as a Lego enthusiast, there's two types, I would say. One that just loves to read instructions and build something. Then you've got the others who are just super creative and mad, and they'll just be able to build the best stuff from scratch, like your Lego Masters guys. I was the other one. I was the therapeutic. I love this kind of follow instructions.
Let's just clarify this. Yeah. So there's therapy Lego.
Yes.
Then there's Lego Masters. What is a Lego Master?
For me, the Lego Masters is someone who can just like create something. Right. And it's like, we're not talking like kids that just create something that's a building. We're talking about something that is so detailed and so realistic. And, you know, if you've ever watched Lego Masters, some of the stuff they build, that's all from scratch. That's all just like from their brain.
Right. So they'll get thousands of pieces.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, what's an example of something one of the masters build? Because I know they run a competition every year.
Yeah.
And then the winner actually gets a set released with what they created.
Oh, that's different. That's Lego Ideas.
Lego Ideas.
Yeah. Okay. So Lego Ideas is something similar. What they do is they design something and then they put it to a vote. So they submit the idea and then the community gets to vote. And when the community get over 10,000 votes, it goes into this draw where Lego will then pick like 10 a year or something to actually redevelop and make that into a Lego set.
Yeah.
And then the designer will get like royalties out of it. So it's called the Lego Ideas program. Okay.
But that's different to Lego Masters, but a lot of Lego Masters would probably submit ideas.
Probably, yeah, for sure.
So a Lego Master is someone who can actually create something like a sculpture or, you know, recreate a pop culture thing just with their own minds.
Exactly.
Like, you know, someone like that would create something in Minecraft, for example.
Yeah. They
would,
or they'll create this in a larger scale without looking at instructions.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Yeah. But I'm not that guy.
But you're more like, I'll follow the instructions.
Yeah, so I'm all about like, I love that whole process. Like, I love the feeling of opening the box and tipping the stuff out, looking at instructions. At the end, you built something so cool and it's impressive, but really it's following instructions. It's the same kind of thing for lighting, and that's what I wanted to create. And I realized, okay, I love that Lego experience. If I can make this into a process, into an end-to-end product, I think other people will like it because I'm sure I'm not the only one.
Okay, so you lit up your little town as a mayor.
Yep.
And then you probably like to your wife, like, check this out. When was the moment when you were like, I got to develop a product?
Yeah.
Like, how did you leap the chasm from doing it for yourself to actually going, you know what, I'm going to try and market this?
I think as soon as I lit my first one, I knew... Like, it kind of just all ticked along. Yeah. It wasn't like I did it for a bit and then bang, that moment. It's like, as I was building it, my first light kit, I was like, this is a project in itself.
Yeah.
And this is something I can document and essentially create this like a blog or an instruction to show other people how to do it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then how long after that did you then open a store and start retailing this stuff?
I think we did it pretty shortly after that, within a couple of months, we did the whole Shopify thing. Shopify was so easy to use. Like, you know, prior to that, I was like, how do you make a website? You got to be a coder. You got to do all this stuff. And then learning about Shopify and templates, and it's like, you can create a website just like that. So we did that. And then I just jumped onto social media from the start, you know, doing our own Instagram page, Facebook page, like going to the community and looking up other people, what they're doing and liking them and tagging them. And then all of a sudden people are starting to follow you. And before you know it, people are buying your stuff.
Right. So you're putting in the groundwork, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs don't apply themselves that way.
Yeah.
Would you say that that's a pretty rare thing to do for someone to actually crawl through groups on social platforms to try to find their audience?
Yeah. Well, thankfully for me, Sam was the one who actually was like, because I said to him, I know that social media is really important. I know that's a way to organically promote yourself. And he gave me the pointer of like, you can get followers by liking someone's post or commenting and then they'll see it. And I was like, oh, that's interesting because people will see and they're like, what's Light My Bricks? And they have a geezer and, you know, before you know it, other people, and they're telling other people about it.
So many people post content, and we talk about this all the time. They'll put content on social media, but then they don't spend time on social media.
Nah,
right? It's called social media. You got to be social. So like, you can't just post and be like, where the hell are my followers?
That's it.
You got to go out there, and you were out there looking at Lego influencers, you were joining community groups on Facebook. There were a lot of groups back then.
Yep.
And you were just like, check this out. Check out what we're working on.
That's it.
How long did it take to have the website really get enough traction for you to go, holy crap, I can quit my job?
It happened pretty quick.
Yeah.
I think within the first 6 months of the business, I was making more money selling lights than I was earning in my day job.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And were you just running this whole operation solo? Did you hire anyone?
I started the business with another work colleague of mine at the time.
Yeah.
We went in there 50-50. We just both loved Lego and building it. But we found at a very early stage that we had different strategic goals.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to take this thing next level. I knew the importance of marketing and advertising. I was like full steam ahead once I knew that like there was a market for it. All in.
Full tilt.
Yeah. He was more like, I think he was more just having fun building Lego and enjoying it. But then look, we agreed to part ways, and that's when I took everything on. It was probably about, I would say, 8 months ish after we started, and that's when I went full steam ahead.
Yeah.
And at that time, that was when the business started taking off. We were getting like multiple orders a day.
Right.
We had to kick into overdrive where, you know, I'll come home after working a 9-to-5, hang out with the kids, get them in bed, and then was like full steam ahead into like orders, packing them, customer service, and creating. Well, when I say creating, I was basically building Lego and lighting it. And just trying to get more and more products out the door, because I knew that like Lego has such a big range and you can light everything.
Yeah.
And the more you got to offer, the more business you're going to get. You know what I mean?
Which is tricky in your industry, right? Because like, for example, Lego will do a new release.
Yeah, but then all the time.
Like how long before it's in stores do they talk about the release of what they've got?
So Lego will either announce new sets through influencers. Most of the time through influencers. Like big ones, I'll do like a big campaign and do an ad. but you kind of do have an idea. Every year it's common which sets or which type of sets get released at what date. You know, 1st of Jan, they have like May the 4th, then they have like August 1st, September. This year it's been crazy. They've just been pumping products out the door.
Right.
But for us, as soon as it's out, I'll buy it, build it, and get out the product as soon as possible, because you want to capture that feeling when someone built something. They're going to put it on the shelf and they're like, oh, what else can I do to make it cool? So you want to get the product out there and accessible as soon as possible. Otherwise, they'll put it on the shelf. They might forget about it. And then once the light, if the light kit comes out much later, then they're like, I'm not feeling it anymore. I'm just going to put the money into a new set kind of thing.
Gotcha. Yeah. So you get it like, yeah. Time is of the essence.
I think for us, it's something that people have understood. Our staff have understood. It's very much similar to my personality, where I'm very fast moving,
yeah.
And everything is like go, go, go. You know, a lot of businesses have a lot of time to develop a product, and they'll develop their products and wait for a while and then launch. You know, for us, it's like get it out there. You know,
yeah.
So it's been pretty.
So with that urgency thrust upon your team, what has that done for you as an entrepreneur? Like, what have you learned from that sense of urgency? Like, we got to do this now.
Yeah, I think for me, I have that FOMO, fear of missing out, and my fear of missing out is that could be a sale that we're not getting. You know, that could be an opportunity that we've missed. So for me, it's all about, you know, I look at it like, if we don't have the product out, we're going to miss out on customers and therefore not achieve sales goals that I've set. Yeah.
So like a set will come out, you'll buy it, you'll construct it.
Yeah.
Then like who on your team's doing what? Like, cause it sounds like not like a one man operation, right? Like someone's got to do the research. Someone's got to, you know, figure out what lights we need and how do we get them to like rotate and flicker and do all that kind of stuff.
So we have a design team. So we've got four guys that are in designers. And so because there's so many different Lego sets being released at different times, quite often they're on their own project.
Yeah.
So for example, August 1st, they might be like three or four different releases. So then everyone's just building their own, lighting their own. But then there's big sets where they're collaboratively, they're, you know, working together to do research, create lighting. They're bouncing ideas all the time.
Right.
Like sometimes they're just like, I'm stuck with this. There's a dark spot here. How do we, you know, project some light on it without being too... you want it to be aesthetically pleasing as well and subtle. So the design team are very much building it. Once they've confirmed that this is the best lighting that we've done for this, then they'll go into like instructions mode, checking mode, and that's a big part of the design process.
There's creating so that. Much involved.
Yeah.
Cause
that's
you gotta,
why. Yeah.
You got to buy the set, you got to build it. Some of them are massive. They got like 8,000 pieces.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes it'll take you.
But then we're also capturing content while we do that too. Good so that's point. Where the media team come in. Yeah.
So many layers. Okay. Yeah. So you got the media team, you're creating the kits, you're blasting that on social media, people are getting excited about it. And then like, I think you were describing to me in a previous conversation, you have like a design program where you can kind of like, build it in 3D.
Oh, yes. So that's something we've knew that we've been playing with is just 3D renders.
Right.
And that like, you know, traditionally what we do is every product we have to do photography, videography, because we want to demonstrate it. That goes on the product page. But something that we've been working a lot with recently is like lifestyle renders and 3D renders. So we've got a guy who's working on, he uses different like rendering programs to, you know, make this thing look like you can't tell if it's a photo or not. You know, it's really smart with technology these days. Yeah. So yeah, that's a new way we're exploring on how to get the media coverage on like a product. Yeah.
And then, so when you're looking at, I guess, your business holistically, like how much of it do you think is like design problems versus just standard business
practices? Yeah, design is... it used to be a huge part of it, but now as we've scaled, we've got like, you know, operations issues, or it could be like manufacturing, you know, there's a whole, there's a lot of facets to it.
Yeah.
So design is, although it's a big part, but it's not, it's probably like 30-40% of it. Because a lot of it is in making sure the processes are in check to make sure that the product is end to end. Everything's there. There's so many moving parts, so many little bits and pieces, and you want to make sure every single kit that goes out the window is all there, complete. It's checked. There's nothing worse than someone getting that light kit, installing it because they're pulling stuff apart. They're putting the components in only to know that there's a broken part or a piece missing.
Yeah.
A lot of people can relate because Lego is similar. Sometimes they're pretty good at it now, but there are cases where, and I've experienced it, where you're building Lego and all of a sudden you're like, where the fuck is this piece? Like, you can't find it. But, I mean, they're really good and yeah. you'll get that piece if you just order it, but it does happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had it happen to me where I was building the Super Mario set. Yeah. We were missing a piece. I was like, what the hell?
But it was in the bag, right?
Yeah. And then I was like, that's actually not my fault.
Yeah,
no, I hate it on Lego. So when you... Dude, like, this is just so mind-blowing to me because, like, there's so many... This isn't just like a standard e-com thing.
No.
You're not just like selling a product and you're like, okay, shipment. There's like, okay, we have to collaborate with another company and kind of predict their maneuvers.
Yes.
And
yeah.
then we have to research the pop culture around the item that's being dropped, like the Ghostbusters thing.
Yeah.
Then you have to order the specific mechanisms and lighting for that particular thing that you're trying to pull off.
Yep.
Then you have to build and design instruction manuals for someone to build it.
Yep.
Then you have to ship it. And then there's, the packaging. Yeah. And dude, there's so many levels to this. And you pulled this whole thing off. But then, like, I think what I've heard from you that you love is the consumer's experience.
Yeah.
And your love of the consumer and how they're enjoying the process. Because it's not like I'm just buying a product and using it.
Yeah.
I'm buying a product and then, like, building it for hours on end.
Yeah.
So there's a ton of things that could go wrong.
Yeah.
What do you think's been the mechanism to your success with so many variables and so much risk?
I think, again, it goes back to me looking at from a customer's point.
Yeah.
And because I've experienced good service, I've experienced bad service.
Yeah.
And I don't want, you know what I mean? I'm very strong on good customer service, and that's customer service and experience. So for me, it's like I look at it at the very start, from the very first interaction with customer service. So I was like, you know, writing, you know, responding to customer queries, and I go out of my way. I don't just be like, yes, no, sold out, no. You know what I mean? I put a lot of effort into the response because you want someone to feel like they're speaking to someone who also genuinely has that passion and cares about Lego. So it's from the very, very start of that interaction. And then a lot of it is put into like the packaging. So you want that premium or as premium as possible customer experience when they're going through the product and opening it up and stuff like that. Then you've got like any after-sale support, you've got even shipping time. You know, you want to make sure someone gets it as quickly as possible. So I was all about that. There's nothing worse than buying something and you got to wait like 3-4 weeks for it to come overseas. If you can get in 2 days, they're like, holy shit, this is awesome. And that's a good reflection on that end-to-end service as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so did you feel like throughout this process, your dependency on another company has hindered your ability to grow a business in any way?
Yeah, definitely. We have worked with various 3PLs. We've changed 3PLs because at one point the service might be really, really good. They're getting stuff out the door and then all of a sudden their staff changes and they're making errors with the orders they're picking, and that's a reflection on you. They're representing you.
Yeah.
So that's definitely had an impact. Same with, you know, shipping times, shipping faults or whatever. Again, it's not your fault, but people don't care. They're not going to blame Ozpost. I'll blame you. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it definitely has an impact.
Yeah. And then regarding Lego, like, I guess, you know, how would you label this? Because you're a second purchase.
Yes.
Because no one's buying your product first, then buying Lego.
Yeah.
They're buying Lego.
Yeah.
And then they maybe wait because they know you're going to come out with something, or they'll build their set and they go, oh, I want to light this thing up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. I think for us, it's, you know, people think, oh, is there much of a market for that? They're not too sure. Like, I mean, my family, extended family still can't really grasp the concept of what I do. You know, they still think I'm just selling Lego, you know? I think people aren't aware of just how big the market is for adult collectors of Lego.
Yeah.
And because there's so much money in that, because adults have disposable income, they love to collect and it's addictive. That's where we come in too, because we touch on that whole display and that pride of display, you know, and that's where we come in as well.
How much do you think of the market is people that want to buy a piece just to display it, and then people that buy it because they love the process?
I think there's both, you know. Right now, I think people just want that end goal.
They
look at the picture.
They want the Ghostbusters.
Like, I want that.
Yeah.
So there's not as many people that were, you know, buying because I love that enjoyment of
it's like IKEA
lighting.
You don't fully love it. You're like, I want the furniture. No.
But I think, I think
I want to build IKEA.
That's
furniture.
It. Yeah, that's most of that enjoyment is building the Lego. I would say it's more,
and that's where you fall in, right?
Yeah,
you're more of the you enjoy the process.
Yes, yes.
But you also want to show it off.
Yeah,
I wonder if anyone in the world loves IKEA's process. They don't care about the outcome. They're just like, man, I love building.
You'd
IKEA.
Question that person.
Yeah.
That's a questionable individual. Okay, cool, man. So even at one point, you got so successful at doing this, you got the attention of Lego.
Yeah, that was a crazy moment. You know, well, what was crazy, I remember, is we started getting orders from people who worked at Lego, and you're like, wow, this person works at Lego, and they're buying stuff for me, and they're like, are they buying it because they're secretly testing or they're doing some mystery shop. But no, they're just
assuming.
I mean, Lego's such a massive company. So they're just like so many different people and they just also love Lego too. So they were buying our product. But then it wasn't until some key people actually reached out and they said, love what you do. Can we find out more about it? Right. That kind of thing. And that was a start of a project or collaboration.
So how far in was it you were doing this till you got their attention?
A year and a half, 2 years.
Wow. Yeah. So you were doing this only for a year and a half.
Yeah.
And then you started 2018. Noticing.
It was before COVID.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you started noticing that the staff at Lego were buying your kits. How did you know the staff were buying your kits?
You see there, I was doing orders and I see.
Like at Lego.com.
Yeah. The Lego group. Some of them in Macquarie Park. Some of them in Billund. And you're like, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And you go onto LinkedIn, like look up their name or what are they doing?
What position are they?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
But how did it feel to get the attention of like one of the world's biggest toy brands?
I mean, we're all about Lego. You know what I mean? So for them to actually recognize, for one, who we are and what we do was just like, oh, that's really awesome. Yeah. But for them to actually reach out and say, hey, we want to find out more about your business. We want to work with you. That's like, dream come true kind of thing. Yeah.
And that's rare for them too.
Exactly. They're such a massive company. You know, they align themselves with like your Adidas, your Levi's, your big players, and here comes Lemon Bricks. Yeah. I don't know, here comes me.
Yeah. And you weren't the only one out there doing this. So how did you, out of all the competitors, get Lego to go, we want to work with you, not the other ones? You're like, I'm the GOAT.
We're the best. That felt good because we knew that they actually spoke to other players in the market and they chose us. So it's kind of like, That was assuring, that we were on the right track.
How many competitors are building Lego kits with all the lighting kits for Lego?
It depends how you look at it.
Yeah.
Is there a competitor or is it a copycat? You know what I mean? But I think something that I've learned is that even if they are copycats, you can't underestimate their power to evolve and improve. And that was probably a lesson that I learned from an earlier stage where I started finding these copycats. I was like, oh man, they're just copying. We're way better. We got a better brand. We got a better product, all that kind of thing. And then forgetting about it. And then like a couple of years later, they're like doing some cool shit.
Yeah.
And so that makes us go, all right, we need to go back, assess, review, and improve. You know what I mean? Stay ahead. With whether it's product development, branding, advertising, getting more creative with your content. It's really important.
How would you, sorry to cut you off, dude, go ahead.
What does a copycat look like for Light My Bricks?
A copycat looks like, it looks like the same product as ours, basically. and they literally will copy your ads. For example, we had a sale, a fifth birthday sale. And we were like, we're writing, timelines where you're having fun. It's been 5 years, happy birthday, Light My Bricks, here's a sale. Literally 2 weeks later, one of their competitors, time flies when you're having fun, 5 years, here's our sale. Like literally word for word copy. It's insane.
Yeah.
So I can laugh about it now, but like.
It probably wasn't funny back then. Yeah. Right?
You're like, that's those bastards.
Yeah, that's it.
Dude, so okay, like you're looking at the competitors at one point, you're like, these guys got nothing on us, right?
Yeah.
For someone who's like running a company and whether it's e-com or anything else, and you start to see others doing well at what you do, and maybe you've been around a little bit longer, what do you think is a good response to that? Like what can someone do to stay ahead of the market, ahead of the competition?
It's going back to the beginning and going, all right, what did you want to work on? Or what did you find important for your business at the start that will help you succeed. Mm. Mine was marketing. Mine was advertising. Mine was branding.
Right.
Big, you know. So we look at it again. It's like, and we go, okay, hang on. It's probably been a couple of years since we have done all that, like properly. And we need to sit down and aim for the best again and reevaluate everything.
Do you feel like maybe the team and yourself got a little bit cozy or comfortable, or
I think it all comes down to me. To be honest, I'm the one. I mean, I'm the founder. I'm the director. I'm the one who drives things. And if I get comfortable, and I did because I was like going through a phase where I wanted to hire the best people as in my team lead, so that they can run it, and I could take a step back. Mm. But at the same time, I wanted more success. I wanted more results. But it doesn't happen like that. It comes, you know, down to you. And that's in line with like my big change in direction in the last 6 months of just realizing there's so much more to learn as a leader. There's so much more to improve on. And for me, it was about getting out there and finding help or finding inspiration and getting, it was a big kick in the ass, really.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, I think a lot of people get complacent, but it's that constant review and constant, how do we do things better? And not get comfortable. I think that's where a lot of people can go wrong.
Such a good piece of advice, man. Mm. And, you know, I recently was reading Howard Schultz's book.
Mm.
I think it's called Forward. I can't remember exactly. But, you know, he was talking about how at Starbucks, they have a thing that they do every 6 weeks.
Yep.
And it's called self-cannibalization.
Yep.
So they used to have a meeting, or still do, every 6 weeks where they sit down and they would say, if we had to destroy Starbucks and we were our own number one competitor, what would we do? And that's how they ideated the whole free internet thing.
Yeah.
So you know how you used to go to Starbucks and the internet would be free? Yeah. Dude, that was pioneering. Cafes didn't do that because the internet used to be really expensive when that happened. So like, you know, I think it's such a valuable lesson to constantly be like, let's not wait for the competitors.
Mm.
It's just like, how do we push for that next, that next threshold?
I think, it's that constant like, you got to stay ahead. Otherwise they'll catch up, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. And what's some stuff that you feel like you're doing now that's like slingshotting you guys?
There's a lot of aspects. One of them is media buying.
Okay.
Scaling through ads. So that's a big project of ours, and just getting more into the creatives and working on content. So that's one big part. Two is just like the numbers game. I'm not a numbers guy, but we've got some things put in place where we're able to track on a daily level if it's profitable or not, looking at like your expense marketing ratios.
Right.
And then, you know, if it's low, that's where we inject more in advertising. So dialing in on that on a daily level has been a big facet. Rebranding. So, you know, that's how I met you. I looked at it like, all right, we need to rebrand. How do we make this as best as we can? And that is, I loved how we've done this workshop and deep dived into everything from the very beginning of the story, you know, who makes, what makes who we are kind of thing, and trying to inject that into the brand so that when people look at it, it's like, no question.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Because
we've had a period where competitors have just copied our brand. And right now, like you type in Lego Lights, it's like, we're all similar, you know? So it's, again, staying ahead and driving that and relaunching this new brand that is like, I'm excited just to have something that's like totally different and totally like, you know, grabbing people's attention. And then, you know, with that, there's your product development. So product development, advertising, branding and packaging is in there. So these are all multiple facets that we're going to go through. That's happening right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Dennis has been a core part of that together. So like we've been working together on your brand strategy, and Dennis has really led the team with that. And, you know, what did you guys really unearth when it comes to copy and strategy and communication in the, like, what's the term for an adult fan of Lego?
They call it the AFOL, AFOL, which was, you know, at one point it's like, what? AFOL? You know, the nerds. But the thing is, I think that is kind of changing.
Right.
You know, society's changing that.
A bit more acceptable.
It's kind of cool, you know? People are like, holy shit, did you see the Ghostbusters? It's so cool.
Yeah.
You know, did you see the Lego Millennium Falcon or whatever it is? It's like more and more accepted and more common for people to have, creative people especially, to build Lego and collect it and display it.
And that's something we discussed as well.
Yeah.
We were saying that by before with Lego, they would be very targeting like children, yes, kids.
Yeah.
And so by doing it just for adults, you're doing the same thing. You're alienating both. So by not saying either, you're really keeping yourself open to both. And that was something, we were working on. We're like, let's make sure we don't just alienate somebody. Like, make it clear that it is for adults.
Yeah.
But don't say it's only for adults.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's...
Yeah, despite the 18 plus tag.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, that'll speak for you. Yeah. Speak for you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, speaking of branding, like, it was... What year was it, Cam, that Lego almost went bankrupt?
Oh.
There was a period where, dude, it got pretty ugly for Lego.
Was it...
2007, I think it was?
I think it was early 2000s. I don't know exactly. But yeah, they basically stretched themselves too thin. They were like doing like scooters at one point or something. They did, they did everything. What? Yeah, they were branching out to so many different, you know...
Branched out too much.
I think so we're looking at it now. Yeah.
Okay, so 2000, I remember reading this. 2003, they almost went bankrupt and they reduced their sets. I think it was, they had 14,000 sets.
SKUs. Yeah.
And they reduced it down to like 7,000 or something like that. Yeah. I might have these numbers wrong.
Sounds right.
Yeah, the idea is correct.
But what happened? Because I know they started. That's when they started to do partnerships with pop culture. That was the big pivot. Like, what do you know about that journey that they had?
I'm not as accurate in my info, but that I think that whole shift to adult consumers came a little bit later.
Right.
I think what they did was basically go back to their core. Yep. Their core audience and their core product and what Lego was all about.
Because around 2003, I can't even remember how old I was, but they started to do the Lego Star Wars stuff.
Mm.
That's where I started. My parents started spending a lot
like franchising and stuff like that. Yeah,
that's when they started.
But it was
to
still
do
centered to around 12. Kids, though. Sorry, I was talking about the whole shift in adult.
Yeah.
Oh sets. Yeah. Cam, go ahead.
They did the Harry Potter collab as well in 2001 to 2011, which would have been huge for them at the time.
Yeah.
But like, what do you see as the value of like really leaning into external brands for like their IP? So doing these collab sets, like, what do you think would be the main motivator for Lego there?
Just to reach more of a wider audience, you know. People love pop culture. They're like Harry Potter fans, Star Wars fans. They want to reach them too, because if it's not franchised, it's got nothing for them to relate to. And then people want to relate to things. And I think that's really...
Yeah. Yeah. So like, even if you're not maybe a fan of Lego, but you are of Harry Potter, Lego's got a sale.
Yeah, that's it.
So...
Yeah. How many Star Wars fans out there who may not have been a Lego fan, but as soon as the Lego set came out, they're like, oh man, have you seen that? Same with like Ghostbusters, you know what I mean?
I know plenty.
Yeah, I'm sure there's heaps of Ghostbusters fans out there. That's their first Lego set that they bought.
Yeah, or it will be now.
Yeah.
After seeing it light that's up it. As well.
That's it. Yeah.
So, weird question for you.
Yeah.
What's been the weirdest thing that you've done in your business to generate a profit?
Oh, man, that's a... I'm not a weird guy.
Not at all.
Yeah. You put me on the spot. I can't actually think of anything that... Okay. I used to operate under different aliases in customer service. And because I wanted to represent that we were this massive brand.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a one.
What were some of the names?
Rebecca. Because I read somewhere that people identify, they respond better to a female name. Mm. So I was playing this Rebecca role. And then we would get guys, Rebecca's really sweet. Can I speak to her, please? I'm like, sure, I'll go get her. Rebecca comes in. How can I help you? Oh, Rebecca, it's been a while since we've spoken. What new sets do you have? Can you help me? I'm like, sure, I'll give you the extra mile, I'll give you a little discount. Like, oh, thank you. Rebecca's a sweetheart.
Hitting on Rebecca?
I was getting a sale. So I guess if you say the weirdest thing.
Whatever it takes, man.
But I had like, you know, I had Rebecca, I had like Henry from finance, I had like a Sean from design. You know, let me just get onto the, you know, our design team. Let me get a design expert onto you. Okay. Oh, let me speak to finance. And, you know, but like, really, it's the same email. It's the same guy.
Does Rebecca still work for Lightmybricks?
She does. Yeah. Rebecca, I used to, at one point, I was so good at like just making up names.
Yeah.
So they're like, my business partner, away, he'll be like, all right, so what's this customer service agent's name? Oh, Rebecca. Okay. She needs a last name. Like, Clairfield. I'm like, I don't know how that. I just pulled that one out.
Of, wow.
You know what I mean?
Felt right.
Like Henry. What's his last name? Jacobs. Sean. Sean Smith. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like yeah. just yeah. yeah. So, representing, and that's, I guess, the power of branding as well. Mm. You want to represent. You want to, I mean, I humbly believed in our product was the best it could be, but having to represent that so that people can see that.
The perception of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's like the Linfox thing where it's like on the back, it, when they only had one truck, it said, you're passing another Linfox.
Yeah.
So people are like, it's another one.
Wait, they did that at the start?
Yeah. They only had,
you have to share that story because a lot of people don't know what Linfox is.
Oh, Linfox is like a truck.
Logistics.
Logistics company. So they would have on the back of it saying you're passing another Linfox when they didn't really have another one. So people would be like, oh, cool. Like, there must be a lot.
It's the one truck getting around a lot.
Yeah. So it's like creating that perception. Which that's is funny. What I'm saying.
There's like a company like that near my work called Opal, and I see their trucks all the time and in a different color. It's probably the same one, just with a different colored one.
Whenever they stop, they just paint it differently and go back.
That's it.
Yeah, it's creating that perception, which is kind of what you're talking about before, which is working on your strengths. Is sometimes better than trying to plug up the weaknesses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's kind of what you're saying, going back to your roots is really focusing on your strengths, and that's what helped Lego, and that's what helped you realize sort of what you were missing.
Yep.
Yeah, so I guess that's another good thing. Like, what would you say, is there more of a benefit focusing on your strengths when you're struggling than trying to plug up weaknesses?
Always concentrate on strengths is good, but I think it's more not look at what's weak, because you might have something that's not weak, but not that strong.
Yeah.
So for me, it's just, you know, looking at the whole piece of the puzzle, constantly reviewing all aspects, I think.
Yeah, taking like a holistic approach.
Yeah.
Making sure you have everything.
That's it. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Mm. Yeah. And when we were hanging out last night, you also talked a lot about, you know, growing up as a kid, you loved Bruce Lee.
Oh, man, Bruce Lee. My man.
Who doesn't?
He's my secret dad. No, I grew up. You know, my dad loved Bruce Lee, so I was watching Bruce Lee films at a very young age. I just thought he was just a badass dude. You know, I used to have black track pants that I just wear, no top, just walk around the house being like, yeah, I'm Bruce Lee. But growing up, like, he was someone, you know, that I looked up to, you know. But it wasn't until I was, you know, early 20s when I started listening to more and more of his, like, philosophy, his teachings about, like, you know, just, you know, I love his quote. What is it? It's knowing is not enough. We must apply. Mm. Willing is not enough. We must do. It's just like, get off your ass and just do it. You know what I mean? You can read and learn all this stuff, but if you're not applying it, then what's the point? You know? So that's just one example of what I love about Bruce Lee. But it's like, you know, he broke the stereotype of Asian men. Mm. You know, Asian men back in the day weren't represented very well. They're represented as weak. You know, whereas Bruce Lee was just a kick-ass dude. You know, and that's what I loved about it.
I remember watching his documentary and they were saying that, you know, back then people were challenging him in the lead role because they were like, nobody wants to see an Asian man.
That's it. Yeah.
As he a got romantic cut from lead.
Yeah.
And he got cut from roles and all the rest of it. But like, he really shifted like perception around what an Asian man could
be. That's it. Yeah. And he was so passionate.
Yeah.
You know, when you hear him speak, he's just like, his facial expressions is like so into it, like what he teaches.
Yeah.
It's so good.
He's so intentional with his words.
Yeah. Like now my older son, Tiger's like, you know, I'm showing him more and more Bruce Lee. He's like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
He's doing like the two finger push up. Yeah. He's doing the 1-inch punch. He's like, oh, yeah, show me that at the end, Dad. I'm like, yeah.
So what do you feel like that imprinted in you as a kid? Because I remember we talked about, you always felt like maybe a bit of a square peg in a round hole, right? Like you're like, man, I kind of want to do things my own way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, walk me through that. Like, what's been maybe your mindset on the early onset of like, you know, coming into an adulthood and then going into a business?
I think because Bruce Lee achieved so much, even though he passed away at a young age, he achieved a lot.
Right.
You know, and he wasn't just your normal, typical Asian doctor, lawyer, I don't know, whatever, office person. Right. And for me, that was like, I want to be that. So I always had that kind of ambitious mindset where I wanted to be something, you know, different to your normal 9-to-5. So that's always resonated with me to achieve something more than the ordinary.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's to this day, I'm like, how do I keep striving for more? How do I be better? How do I be better? How do I be better?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, into now, like, do you feel like there's people that you look up to now, you aspire to be like, that have helped you in the business sense?
I mean, all the people that have made it big, all the ballers out there, it's like, oh, that's pretty cool what they've achieved. I don't have specific people who I'm like, I want to be like that person. I just have a range and I just look up to them and I see what they have and I'm like, how they built success, how they hustled, how they grinded, you know, all that kind of thing. And to me, that's where I draw inspiration from.
Yeah. And being such a creative guy, it sounds like you've really started to conquer this market.
Mm.
And, you know, classic entrepreneurs, we're always got our eyes set on the next thing.
Yeah.
What are you obsessed with at the moment that you're striving for in the future?
I think I'm obsessed with people knowing more and more about Kenny Lee, who I am, my story, the product, yes, but more so the guy behind that product. So right now I'm just buzzing on creating more and more insightful, interesting, entertaining content, building up my channel, growing an audience and hitting more and more people.
Okay.
That's something that's like I'm really fueled about. That and the business brand as well, that's kind of, you know, related. So for me, it's all about relating with people and getting people to relate with you and the product and I guess the guy behind it.
Yeah, and we've talked a bit about this. Now you're going all in on personal branding, which is a different sport, right?
Because
when you're branding a company and you're branding yourself, there are different games you have to play.
Yep.
What's been your experience with the difference? Like, what have you felt that's been different for you to grow a company with a partner to launching your own personal brand? And just to highlight that, you've scaled your personal brand to 10,000 followers, I believe.
Yep.
In 100 days.
Yeah, we celebrated that last night.
We celebrated. That's impressive, man. Yeah. But like, what's been your experience between the two? Like, how would you separate them?
The personal one is very personal. Yeah. Like, you're very exposed. Do you know what I mean? Like, people will, when you're a business, you know, people can criticize a business, but you don't take it like that. Whereas personal, you could get the toxicity, you can get negative feedback, you can just get rude comments.
And you can't get Rebecca on the
emails anymore. Yeah, that's right. Just change it to Rebecca.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, from a personal perspective, that can really get to you, you know? There've been moments I'm like, what, really? But then I'm like, oh, okay, if anything, that fuels me even more. And that inspires me more. And that just drives me to like continue this and to make it even better and better and better. And it's good lessons. It's good life lessons that I love to like share with my boys and be like, hey, social media is all around you. You're going to grow up with this. There's going to be idiots out there, whether it's on social media or just in person. All this shit's going to happen. And you got to understand it's not always, and I said it in one of my pieces, it's not about you, it's about them. And people that are easily, you know, making these cheap low blows, they're going through shit too. And it's important for you to not dwell and keep moving, keep striving forward, that kind of thing. So, in a way, it was like shit to receive that, but in a way, I was like, it was kind of cool. It was a good lesson. It was a good piece, and it's something that I know a lot of people as well are going through with content creation or putting themselves out there. You know?
Yeah, it's always tough to deal with, but putting it into perspective.
Yeah.
But you were saying learning the lessons. Like, is there something that you got from business branding and creating that you've really taken to heart when it comes to personal? Something that's consistent.
Oh, hold on. As in something that's.
That you've taken from working with Light My Bricks that's really helped giving you perspective for your personal brand.
Yeah, I think it's the constant evolvement, improvement, you know, that just the it's a constant thing of just how you look at it from a holistic point, from an outside point and just review and better and improve.
Yeah, almost like a third person.
The same thing.
For yourself.
It's the same thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then with your personal brands, what have been maybe some of the things that have excited you about that journey and maybe there's some of the things that, you know, maybe were challenging hurdles you had to overcome.
I think exciting is just like having fun with it. You know, as much as I want to, I guess, give people some insight or teach, there's also that fun element to it. Yeah. You know what I mean? There's that I'm just a normal down to earth big kid at heart. It's exciting just to create content and experience stuff and share that with people. And the challenging stuff is more just how do you, I guess, I try and have a bit of a message in everything I do. So the challenge is being able to have that in each piece. But also the challenge is just workflow and how do you fit that into your day to day and how do you balance, you know, because I've got a family as well. I've got the business. How do you make sure that all the stuff you're pouring into the personal stuff isn't impacting everything else?
Right.
So it's a constant thing of review, balance, and making sure, you know what I mean?
So how have you managed that?
I wouldn't say I did the whole post every day. Yeah. And if I don't eat a dog biscuit, I kind of like, I gave myself a bit of a leeway with that one. I was like, you know what? I've got, and there's days where I'm just like, today I'm not posting anything. I'm just going to try not to look at my phone. Just trying to, you know, be with my family or you know, remember the little things in life. So the challenge is, just prioritizing things and having that attitude or mindset that's like, it's all right if I can't do that, you know? Part of my stresses are, oh, I didn't get that done. Couldn't put enough time here. But sometimes it's good just to take a step back and go, all right, what's the worst that could happen if I don't do that? And that's, you know, helped me kind of shift my mindset.
That's good, man.
And attitude.
Because you got to have love for yourself, right? Of course, and I think sometimes people, you know, they can beat down on themselves or, you know, really treat themselves quite horribly for not doing something. And for sure, like posting consistently on social is important, but dude, when you got kids, you got a business, it's a different game.
I'm a basketballer too, so I got to make sure I get my basketball in time and make sure I'm looking after my health and all that kind of thing. So it's important. For sure.
Yeah. So what were some of the moments maybe when you were posting content that you started to realize, huh, this is doing well, this is resonating. Like, what have you learned about social media as a personal brand in the recent months?
I think, you know, just a simple example, there's a lot of people that relate, you know, and you can see that with what they write, and people will message you directly and be like, and so seeing that support or seeing that growth in audience of people who are like-minded or relate in some way, whether it's, you know, their love for Star Wars, their love for Lego, or even being Malaysian, because that's my background, you know. Right. It's interesting. A lot of my followers are from Malaysia. And I'm like, is that because I've posted about Malaysian food or something about my heritage? It's like, you know, it's that camaraderie of, oh, there's another Malaysian brother out there. I'm going to follow him. And you know what I mean? They have that relation. So that's been insightful and interesting.
Do you feel like having that personal brand has made you more accessible to your community?
Definitely. Definitely. I think because you're just being open, you're being vulnerable, you're exposing all areas of your life so that people can really get to know who is behind the business side of things. So they see the business side of things and then they see the personal side of things. So
And I know there's a bit of a driving force behind this for you because you've talked a lot about wanting to, I guess, get out there and speak to people and make an impact in different communities and, you know, particularly in the Asian community with men and just be like, guys, you don't have to go out there and follow these stereotypical ways of entrepreneurship. Yeah. So for you, like this this mission above the content, what has that been for you and how much has that been a motivator to stay consistent and post?
Yeah, I think there's so many... the stereotype, there's the people that I just see, and not just Asian, just like guys in general, dads, husbands, that they are not satisfied with their work or they just don't have that confidence or security to just do something about it.
Yeah.
Something as simple as like someone's waiting in line for ages, someone cuts in front of them and they're just like, okay. They just take it or their food is cooked wrong and they just don't say anything. You know, that to me, just I get so passionate about that. I'm like, why don't you fucking say something? You know, so like...
Never let someone cut in line.
Yeah, but then there's just... There's a lot of people that are like that, right?
Yeah.
Who are just... Oh, they have ideas or they want to do stuff. They just don't do it, right?
Got it.
So I would love to just get that message to people to be like, man, sometimes in life you just got to do it. I know there's also external factors, but that's what drives me and that's what... You know, something I really want to hit on.
And you have like a quote and it's like, whatever happens, create a way.
Create a way.
So when it comes to that, like what's been your manifesto to persevere in business?
Yeah.
Because it seems like what's driven you to the success of Light My Bricks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's amazing collaboration you did with Lego. Mm. And now you're injecting that into your personal brand. It seems like there's similar ingredients across here.
Yeah.
Like, what do you think is your X factor in business that's driven you?
I have that FOMO. I think that's what it is. It's like, oh, I got to get it. You know, it's got to happen now. If I don't, I'll miss it. Do you know what I mean? So I'm all about like
a sense of urgency?
A sense of urgency. I make decisions. I feel as though I can make decisions quick.
Right.
I'm a risk taker. And sometimes you need that. Yeah. You know what I mean? You can't wait for the opportunity to pass because it will pass if you're not quick enough. So for me, that's just been that consistent mindset in everything I've done is to just go do it. So a lot of people that work for like my bricks are just like, man, you make decisions so fast. Like one day I'll be deciding one thing and the next minute, we're doing this now, and it's like completely different, or it's like, oh, you know. So a lot of people, I'm learning that a lot about myself, and sometimes you got to like treat it with a little bit more, you know, take a step back sometimes. But I do strongly believe that part of that whole FOMO and just get it out there and go has definitely contributed to, you know, where we are. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you always been that way?
I think so. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So for someone who's maybe not innately that nature, what would be your advice to someone who's like, man, I wish I could make decisions quickly?
Yeah. I think people need to seek like-minded people or people that they want to be like,
right,
and surround themselves with that. You know what I mean? That's, I feel as though accountability or just that support network system is really important. Yeah. I think you know, you can't just be like, well, I'm not like that. I can't do that. And it ends there. It doesn't end there. Mm. You know, you got to reach out. And if you don't, it just won't happen.
Yeah.
You got to still do something about it, even if it is reaching out to get help on how to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something I guess I've learned too.
That's really interesting. Yeah. And Cam and I were having a conversation with David Meltzer recently. I don't know if you know who David is, but anyone can Google him. But he was basically saying that at all times, he has a coach, a teacher, and a mentor.
Mm.
And he said that they're all different.
Yep.
And, you know, a coach is someone who's like, you know, going to keep you accountable.
Yep.
Like a PT, like, come on, man, another rep, you know, like they just push you and they're with you. A teacher is someone like maybe you've never met, but you're consuming their content and they're teaching something.
Yep.
Like I learned a lot from Chris Doe. Mm, I know you learned a lot from Davey Fogarty.
Yep, yep.
But then a mentor is someone who is where you want to be and that you can aspire to be like.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you work with them or you aspire to be like them. For you, like who have been these key people on your journey?
Well, Bruce Lee is definitely one of them, you know, just, you know, what he represented. Someone like Michael Jordan, you know, I'm a big basketball fan, just seeing his work ethic, his successes, and even in business as well. Mm. And I don't know if I can think of another person, but, yeah.
So for someone who's trying to become a better decision maker, like you said, like how would one, surround themselves with the right people?
Seek it, go out and find it. You know, for me, like I went through this period where I didn't know anybody to learn off. I didn't know, none of my friends had businesses or anything like that. So I just didn't know. And so you have to go out and seek it. You got to find what's out there. And I started with just going to an entrepreneur summit. You know, I was just like, I'm just going to go and see what I can hear. I mean, what I can learn. I you know, you only know what you know. So going into that, I was a little bit skeptical about it. And
like, what are they going to sell me?
What are they going to sell me? What is this? But I, you know, even something like that, you learn, you'll always come out with something valuable, whether it's a lesson or just being inspired or just like totally pumped up for something. You know what I mean? So that was for me, the real start of going out and finding more and more, and then just surrounding yourself and meeting new people or getting into e-com communities. It's easy just going on to Google and be like, you know, e-commerce community. Or for me, that is, you know what I mean? Like you just find it. Yeah.
That's a really good point. I think, you know, like so many times in business, you need to thrust yourself into a situation that feels a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And for me, it's, you know, it's that cliche, like get outside your comfort zone, think outside the box kind of thing. But
just
like
get somewhere.
It's so important. Like when I see an ad come up for an event, usually my knee-jerk reaction is like, oh, I don't want to sit there all day and listen to people pitch me stuff. But then there's a second thought in my head. Yeah. It's like, what if there was like one idea in that whole event that could change your life?
Yeah.
And when I started going to events and just having this belief like there's a nugget here, I'm going to find it.
Yeah.
It might be a line. It might be a quote. It might be a thing. It might be 8 hours investment for a nugget.
Yeah. Yep.
But every time I've gone to an event, I've found something, I've written it down, and I've actioned it.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important to certainly surround yourself with the right people, but then to take something and deploy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why that Bruce Lee quote, man.
Hey. So what are you deploying right now that's something outside your comfort zone that you're like actually trying to grow in?
Yeah. Communication is a huge one. I started listening a lot to Vin Gang.
Hey.
And like,
shout out to Vin.
Man, that guy, the way he communicates, the way he captures you, you know, like I could listen to him for an hour and still be like, you got my attention kind of thing. Mm. And to have that skill is like, man, I want that. So I'm just like, yep, sold. Get me in on your course. I'll buy whatever you're selling kind of thing, because I want to have that. And so I'm very much about still learning as much as I can.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that communication is one. Just like life coaching is another thing that I've dabbled in, or not dabbled, I'm right into it. And I found that's really helped. And it touches on the three things that you were talking about.
Right.
And just like, you know, my e-commerce mentoring, you know what I mean? Mm. Getting into that group and just learning and bouncing ideas off, or hearing about what other e-com businesses are doing, drawing inspiration on that, because they might not have exactly the same product as yours. They might be very different, but then there's
nugget.
Are,
you're like, ooh.
That's it. Find that nugget.
Yeah. Has anyone stolen the Rebecca nugget from you?
Oh, I'm sure they have. I was listening to Sabri Subi the other day talking about when he started, he represented that. We're a big, massive agency when it was just him and his wife, I think, at the time. I can't remember.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to get real vulnerable here for a moment. Yeah. So when I started Rival, it was called Victory Front Media.
Yeah.
And I had Cassie.
Yes.
And she would...
that was your Rebecca.
It was just me.
Yeah, there you go.
It was just like, you know, I would email him, hey, I'm too busy, but Cassie's going to take care of your invoice.
Yes, that's it.
And I was Cassie. Yes. And I was doing the invoice.
Yeah, there you go.
Because I figured out that having someone else chase an invoice was way more effective.
Yeah.
Because the client was my friend.
Yes.
So let's just say Dennis is my client.
Yeah.
You know, we're jiving, we're jamming. And rather than me saying, dude, pay your invoice.
Yeah.
I'd be like, hey, man, I'm really sorry. Cassie just like bumped me on the shoulder the other day. She's just chasing up your invoice, man.
Yeah.
So it just gave me this additional paradigm. So
a lot of people do it, you know, a lot of like, classic example, like tattoo artists do it. Like they're like, I'll just get you booked in. I'll get someone to book you in. Right. Really, it's just them. Yeah. But then you just automatically think, oh man, that means they're pretty big. That you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It puts that, it plays on them. I have to say for the record that we do have real customer service agents now. They are real. And it's not me. Okay?
I do have employees and team here. they are real.
For the record. Yeah.
I don't do that anymore.
But it's all part of that.
It's part of the journey.
That's how you start.
That's it.
Yeah. But you make a good point, right? Like, so Vin Yang, I've had the pleasure of like working with him.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I went down to not a speaking event, but he has another one he's developing. Mm-hmm. I can't really talk about it. Mm. But what an amazing guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, his story is interesting. And, you know, I think it's so important as an entrepreneur, you ethically steal from others.
Yeah.
So for me...
Ethically,
right? So you don't just steal everything from one person.
Yeah.
So some people I love is, you know, like, for example, Jim Rohn.
Mm-hmm.
So I would listen to Jim Rohn and I would listen to how he would phrase a sentence and create a gesture. And I was like, that's interesting. I wonder if I can like... steal that gesture or land a point the same way he does it. It's kind of like stand-up comedy. You know, comics usually get really good by observing other comics. Mm. And I think entrepreneurs, we could get better at this by observing other entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
So by being in proximity to others that are doing what we do and observing them and ethically taking things and going, I'm going to use that. So for example, for me, like Vin just... you know, even how he has a pause or how he emphasizes a point or how he uses his body.
Yeah.
Bro, what a teacher.
Yeah. The different tones or the different, you know, the piano, that analogy. Like, I love that. Yeah.
But I love hearing that that's what you're actively doing.
Yeah.
You're seeking out counsel and you're taking these ideas from different people.
Look, I'm no way in any shape or form, like, I haven't figured it out.
Yeah.
I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
I'm very much journeying and I don't think I'll ever stop. Journeying, you know, you'll never stop learning.
Yeah.
That's how I look at it.
So another question for you around fatherhood.
Mm.
So myself, I have a 3-year-old.
Yep.
And I have a 9-month-old.
Yep.
And I have a business.
Yep.
And everything else that comes with it.
Yes.
How have you been able to manage a family,
mm-hmm.
being a father and a husband,
yep.
in the midst of all this accelerated growth?
Yeah. It's been pretty chaotic, to be honest. It's been very tough.
Yeah.
But it's easy to be like, you know, I got to work, right?
Yeah.
And you're constantly working. Before you know it, you've missed out on a lot of things the kids have done. And you have to always stop and be like, life is so fast, right? And you just, for me, it's all about adjusting that mindset again, like what I said before, and stop and think, you know, what's the worst could happen? Because a lot of the times it's your attitude, it's how you see things, and that's how you stress yourself out. So for me, it's always been really important. I think my wife has helped me really be grounded in that sense.
Yeah.
And you know, I would consider myself like pretty active at home. Like I love picking up the kids. I love like going to their basketball games or their karate, you know, I love that, you know what I mean? And I find that I'm fortunate enough to have my own business. So you do have that flexibility to do that. You do have the flexibility to just sneak away during the day or whatever you need to do to get shit done, because you know you can catch up later on, or you can get to that email later on, all that kind of thing. So it's important that you stay grounded and you know stick to it.
Right.
So that's how I've been able to juggle things. Yeah.
And would you have any advice out there to dads who are maybe looking to start business?
Yeah.
Maybe they're right now in employment and they're like, how the heck can I get a leg up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think for me it was hard because I always knew that I wanted to do something, but I didn't know what it was.
Right.
And so look, it's easy for me to be like, oh, just go find it or just figure it out. But like sometimes things just come your way.
Gotcha.
You just have to be very active in understanding what is coming your way.
Yeah.
And there could be an opportunity there. So it could be just assessing everything that's happening. And if it doesn't come now, it'll come later. You know, for me, it's like, I always wanted to have my own business, but you don't know what it is and all that kind of thing. It took me a long time. It's like, I always wanted that since my early 20s, but probably didn't figure it out until my 30s. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's, I guess, a part of it, you know, like I think, would you say timing plays a substantial role in someone's success?
Yeah, definitely. Timing does play a big part. I'm a big believer that sometimes things happen for a reason too.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, you got to go get it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like a bit of a catch, you know, 22. But I think at the end of the day, if you see something, if it does come your way and you see something, just grab it, go out and get it. And it all starts with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's been maybe the most impactful lesson throughout this development of this business, wherein like maybe day to day now you do different to day to day then?
Being involved in as much as you can in the business.
I see.
For me, you know, like I went through that period where I was like, I'll just hire guys. I don't want to worry about this kind of stuff. But I think you have to, it's easy to forget all the little things.
Yeah.
And time goes fast. So I try and be as involved as I can, or at least know what's going on in every aspect of the business all the time.
Yeah.
So it's something that I've learned that I do now that I didn't maybe do so much 12 months ago.
Yeah. And I find that too. And, you know, and I got nothing but love for my crew and my team. And I think, you know, there's this amazing quote, and Jocko Willink, you know, who talks a lot about leadership, quoted, I think it was like a military commander or a general from World War One.
Mm.
And the quote was, the troops only do that which you check.
Mm.
Meaning your team prioritizes the things that they feel that you focus on.
Yeah.
So if your focus is over here, the team thinks, okay, that's the priority.
Yeah.
Or maybe they feel maybe potentially neglected if you're not looking at their stuff. So how much do you feel like your focus as a CEO shifts how the team operates with so many moving parts in your business?
I think again, it like if they need to see the passion and the drive from their leader, and if they don't see that, then it affects their attitude as well.
Right.
They're like, he maybe doesn't care so much about that. Then I won't care so much about
that.
So I think it's really important that you make it know, like it's really good. I always share what's going on with what I'm doing. You know, there's a lot of leaders out there who they just go off and do their thing. And then people are like, I don't know, he's being off being a CEO. But it's really important for me to let them in on everything that's happening too.
Right.
You know, so they're exposed and they know what's going on. And then when they see all these things I'm going through, all this learning, it's like, it should kind of, I mean, the idea is for it to kind of pass down to them as well.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's a good point, right? Because a lot of CEOs and founders might hide problems from their team.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you found it more effective to just go, hey guys, this is going on.
Yeah.
This is happening right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
What do we do?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I try and be as real as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's, how good is it when they know that you're going through something and then you're coming out on top?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's like, that's the success and that's what you want them to see that you've been through or you're going through, but then you're coming out on top. So that's kind of what drives it for me. Yeah.
And what's the culture that you've developed around you now in the crew? Like what's happening behind the scenes?
Well, we're going to, I'm trying to encourage more and more people to get in on content and stuff like that.
Okay.
But you know,
would you say
us,
they're a little content resistant? Some are.
Yeah. But I'm trying to push that forward because, you know, a big part of who we are is that we're not a faceless company. Mm. You know, we are real people with real passion, and we genuinely love Lego, pop culture, all that kind of thing. So that is in line with the brand. So it's all about getting people to not just know me, but to know the rest of the crew or that there are real people in this company and it's not just Kenny and Rebecca.
Yeah. There's a real crew behind it.
Yeah.
Well, dude, that's incredible. And it seems like you're absolutely killing it. You
Thank
know,
you.
I saw
yeah.
that you're going on television
yeah.
on Friday.
The Today Show came out and did a little interview and they're going to air it this Friday.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to figure out how do you record TV? Like who watches TV these days? I don't know, man.
Yeah. You might be able to download it. We'll find a way. I'm sure Kate might be able to have a help out somehow. And it sounds like, you know, things are really starting to take a turn when it comes to your personal brands.
Yep.
You're starting to get invited to speaking engagements. You're starting to get on television.
Yeah.
People want to interview and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Man, how can people connect with you, reach out to you and collaborate with you?
Just through my socials, through Kenny Be Like Water, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. I'm on all three. I'm not quite on. I mean, I'm on a little bit of Twitter, but yeah, it's more the socials at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, man, we absolutely had a blast having you on the pod today.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for dropping in.
It's been great. And, thanks heaps.
Dude, appreciate you so much. Thank
no
you.
No worries, man.
Hey.